Okay, in this session, we're going to continue to go along with the 01 Genesis chapters 1 to 3. Okay? I want you to see how significant chapters 1 to 3 are. We're a little bit behind. We'll be about one session behind. That's okay. We'll catch up. You know, I'll talk faster next time or something. And so, instead of slide 20, let's jump to slide 26 for those of you that are going along in your computer. Now, when Genesis was written, where was Israel? What was the context in which Genesis was written? This is very, very important. You got a hint up there with the picture. They're at Mount Sinai. Probably Mount Sinai. Maybe it was after Mount Sinai. It was sometime in the wilderness wanderings, if this is truly written by Moses. Okay? Now, the church and Judaism throughout the centuries have believed that Moses wrote the first five books of Moses. That's why they're called the books of Moses. I take it that that is the case, but many Old Testament scholars today do not believe that to be the case. Rather than me trying to argue with them, I want to use my time in class to tell you what actually Moses said. So Israel was out in the land. They had built the tabernacle at Mount Sinai, but they didn't trust God to actually bring them into the land. And so they looked at rock formations for 40 years. You know? And that doesn't seem like very good training to go on into the land, just looking at rocks. There has to be something more than that. They needed to actually find out who they were, who their God was. If they find out who their God was or is, they'll find out who they were or are. Make sense? This is what I tell people all the time. People tell me, I just need to find myself. And I go, well, you're right here. I just found you. You don't need to find yourself. You're right here. Let me shake their shoulders a little bit, you know. This is for you counseling students. This is what you do, okay? Dr. Val will tell you, no, don't do this. But just say, you're right here. You don't need to find yourself. You need to find God. You need to find out who He is. If you find who He is, then you will find yourself. Because a lot of people are trying to find themselves, and people are trying to help them find themselves, and a lot of these people are telling them, well, you are glorified protoplasm. Through millions of years of random processes, it ends up with you. How do you feel about yourself now? Worse. I mean, modern psychology says that we're accidents of history, does it not? Freudian psychology, I'm not going to try to pretend I know all the things that your professors know about in school of counseling, but I was a psychology major for a few months back in college, so it gives me some credit to totally damage your minds, you know? We are made in the image of God. What kind of God do we serve? Phenomenal God. Our problem is that we think too low of God and we think too high of ourselves. If we can have a high view of God, I think we'll have a higher view of ourselves, but it won't be too high. It'll be higher than what the evolutionists tell us, but it won't be that we're so proud. Right? I think a person who's proud is not thinking correctly. Okay? And if I'm ever proud about something, I have to evaluate myself. Okay, do I believe I'm self-made man? You've seen these little cartoons of the guy chipping himself away of a sculpture. He's a self-made man. That's ridiculous. Who provided him the hammer? Who provided him the chisel? Who put the marble slab there in the first place? You know what I mean? I mean, I know it's just a picture. But none of us are self-made. I thought it was really great in chapel today. One of our students talked about how he was educated in his bachelor's degree, got his master's degree from Harvard and his PhD from MIT. And the class did the same, everyone in chapel did the same thing. Oh, Harvard, MIT. And then he said, Philippians chapter 3, whatever I put my trust in, I consider it garbage in light of Christ. See, the student was saying, I understand who I am. I understand that it's God, it's Jesus who makes me who I really am. Here's the point. Israel needed to know who God was and who they were before they could go on into the land. They were about to cross Jericho, a walled city, double-walled. No way could they conquer Jericho in their own strength. No one else had been able, you know, I mean, to do it in recent history. But God could do it. And so Israel needed to know, who is their God? Here's the Hebrew here for Elohim, the word for God. Well, this is where election comes in. God says, I am the God who's king over all. I made the heavens and the earth, and I chose you. I chose you. Your origin is in election. Your origin is in promise. So don't follow all those idols. Realize, grasp that the king chose you to rule, as we talked about before. That, I think, is the idea of Genesis that brings us in to understanding what it says. Some years ago, I was in my home state of California going to the Space and Science Center, and I took these pictures of how the world came. So they say, long before our solar system existed, giant stars exploded, scattering dust, gas and dust through space. Okay, that's how you came about. Don't you feel special? About 5 billion years ago, some of that dust formed our sun and solar system. Life on Earth evolved, and here you are. Oh, I feel so special now, you know. And when our sun dies billions of years from now, that same dust will scatter into the universe, someday forming new stars, planets, and maybe new life. Life made of stardust. This is what is taught as science. You are stardust. That's what they're saying. I would say they got part of it right. They got the dust part right. They just didn't get the star part right. You know, you are actually ground dust, okay? Biblically speaking, you want to know? Genesis 2:7, you know? So it goes on, one giant leap. I thought, that's at least they're being honest there. This is one giant leap. And they talk about how the moon was formed. All right, here's how the moon was formed, according to the theory called the Big Whack. All right, about 4.5 billion years ago when the solar system was young. That sounds pretty old to me, but anyway. A planet about the size of Mars smashed into the Earth. Lighter material from both the Mars-sized planet and the Earth was blasted out on the Earth in orbit and came together to form the moon. So the impactor hit the Earth, and the moon was formed from the Earth. That makes me want to just take a solid ball, take another ball, and throw it against it and see how that ball is going to form another perfectly formed ball that will rotate around it once a day. I mean, you think about this. I was looking at this display with my mother, who we're bringing, you know, and my sons, So we had three generations there looking at this thing. And my mother was like, yep, this is what we've been telling you ever since you're kids. See, the scientists say this. And I'm like, Mom, think about this. I mean, I just told her, Mom, I don't have enough faith to believe this. It takes an enormous amount of faith to see that all this order came through accidents. So what do we have in the book of Genesis? The Hebrew title, Bereshit, is taken from the very first word in the beginning. So see, I've gone to page 57 now in your notes. Here's one of the perplexities. Here's one of the interesting things about the first five books of the Bible. They're written in Hebrew, but they have Greek names in our Christian Bible. We don't call it Bereshit. We call it Genesis or Genesis. That's the Greek word for origin or source or birth. Not a bad word for the book. Because this is where we do find our origins in election and promise. And Genesis answers the big questions. Where did we come from? Why is there evil in the world? And is there hope? Let's talk about the most important things in life, okay? The most important issues are origin. That's where did we come from, all right? The second one, actually, I should probably make this. The second one is purpose. That's going to actually flow from origin. I don't have that one here, but that is why do we exist? All right? I should probably change this to actually be four questions, not three questions. The third major issue you're going to need to find out in life is morality. Why is one thing better than something else? And here's where Genesis 3 comes into play. And then the last is destiny. I'm just going to call this life's four basics. Okay, your answer to these four questions is going to determine just about everything about you. If you think that your origin is through the big whack, planets colliding, and then all this wonderful beauty and order comes, you're going to have a whole different perspective on life. If you think your purpose, well, actually, the evolutionists don't even really offer anything here. They say that there is no purpose to life. They don't offer an alternate purpose. Sometimes they'll say, oh, purpose in life is family, something like that, something very shallow. You know, love your spouse, love your kids, take care of your parents. Those are all, you know, wonderful things to do, but why would you ever want to do that if everything's just an accident and everything's the survival of the fittest? Why? Why love your family? Why care for people? Morality is the third one, because morality, why are some things right and some things wrong? The Bible answers that question. God gives standards. The emphasis of chapter 2 of Genesis is not so much all the standards. The emphasis is God's overflowing grace, his overflowing provision. There's a garden that's put in Eden. That means Eden is a bigger area, and the garden's only just a part of it. All right? The Lord planted a garden in Eden, and he said, enjoy everything. I've given you every green plant for food. You can eat everything in the garden. You can eat all the fruit in the garden. God is such a gracious God. But God is not a controlling God. God's not like the helicopter father, you know. You cannot do anything wrong. I'm not going to let you do anything wrong. He gives them the opportunity to do wrong. And there we see morality come about. Morality is when we decide that we are the ones who are to decide what's right and wrong and forget what God has to say. But we also see destiny in Genesis 1 to 3. Because, as we've seen before, Genesis 3 says, in verse 15, even after they fail, God says, don't despair. The seed of the woman, who's in a real point of weakness, she's just sinned. Her descendant is actually going to be the one who's going to defeat Satan and actually, we find later on, rule the world. So this all is absolutely wonderful from a Christian, or even from a Jewish worldview, Jewish point of view that we've got at this time. These are the four most important things about you. Don't ever marry somebody who has a different perspective on these four basics in life. You're headed for trouble. Because these are the basics. You know? Okay. Any of your thoughts or questions or comments about that? Some might say the word meaning instead of purpose. What gives us meaning in life? From an evolutionary standpoint, they would say the same thing. There's no purpose, there's no meaning. You can look them up. Look it up on YouTube. They'll give you actual professors here who are in classrooms like this, not at Singapore Bible College, thank God, but secular universities. They just go tell the people, there's no meaning in life. Well, I'm so glad that God helped me to see that's not true. When I was young, that helped set the trajectory of my life, and the same for you. Although I think we would all say, I wish this or that was different in my life. Yeah. Okay, what question?
It may be so silly to all of you, but the thing is, I feel that I ask this question is in the sense that who wrote this so-called the book of Genesis and talking about the creation of this kind of stuff? As in the sense that it must be inspired by someone.
Oh, that's a great question.
And the thing is, when it was written, okay, there's also a lot of things happening during that time.
Okay, you're asking two questions. One of them is, who wrote Genesis and in what context? I'm proposing that since Moses wrote it, it has to be written before he dies on Mount Nebo in the wilderness. In some sense, at least after Jethro told Moses, don't try to make decisions for everybody, then Moses had enough time right out in the wilderness to write these books. And what context is he writing? He's trying to prepare Israel to go between, they come out of a land of idolatry in Egypt. Who knows how many Egyptian gods they were all exposed to. They go out in the wilderness. There's no idolatry in the wilderness. Nobody's living there, you know. But that was a time of preparation because they're going to go into Canaan, which was also filled with idolatry. So they're in that wilderness place between two lands of idolatry. How does Moses know all this? I would say mostly through divine revelation, but also probably through some written records. We'll get to Genesis 5. Where he shows that Adam had a son named Seth. He was 130 years old when Seth was born. Seth was 105 years old when Enosh was born, etc. There may have been written records that talked about that. So I don't have a problem with Moses using written records. Acts 7 says that Moses was educated in all the education of the Egyptians. Okay, now that means that Moses knew the Egyptian creation myths. And he was a man of great learning right there in the palace. I would find it very surprising if he didn't know the Babylonian creation myths as well. that those records, those stories, the Gilgamesh epic, Enuma Elish, some of these sort of things, maybe even the Code of Hammurabi, which predated Moses 300 years, that all those had been copied and brought into the palace at Egypt. It seems quite likely that Moses had written, had read about these other ones. So I think what he's actually doing in Genesis 1, Genesis 2, is he's responding to those other creation myths that predate the Bible. Now, some of us have a problem with that. Yeah. I mean, when I first heard that, I went, there's creation stories that were before Moses? You mean his is not the first one? Oh, no. And then I looked at my presuppositions on that. Why was I assuming that Moses has to be the first one to write about how the world came about? Why could he not be responding to people who had other views of where we came from and why evil's in the world and all that sort of thing? I think actually he is responding to those. You see, for example, in Genesis 1, it says, and then God created the two lights, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night. Do you ever think about that? Why is he avoiding saying sun and moon? The word sun and moon don't even appear in Genesis 1. Why does he say the greater light and the lesser light? I think the reason for that is because the word ra for sun in Egyptian is the name of the sun god. The sun is called Ra, but the sun god has the same name, Ra, R-A. And I think Moses goes to pains to say that God created the greater light. He doesn't want anyone to misinterpret him and say that God created Ra. And also Min, M-I-N, moon, is the moon god of Egypt. He doesn't say, and God created Ra and Min. He says God created that greater light. And everybody knows what that means, and the lesser light to rule the night. So I think this idea of creation by spoken word, that's also in the Egyptian creation story. The Egyptian god speaks things into creation. Should we not be expecting that there's going to be points of commonality between the non-biblical creation myths and what we find in Genesis 1? This does not destroy my faith. That buttresses my faith that Moses is saying, let me tell you the truth in light of all that you've heard. You can see it in your own life. Sometimes you have found you've been taught the lies before you were taught the truth. And I grew up in a home, as I noted a few minutes ago, that taught me evolution. To this day, my mother and my stepdad, they don't want to talk about it. They think I'm crazy to believe in creation. And I tell them, you guys are the ones that taught me order. You taught me intelligence. My mother taught me how to talk, how to walk. These things didn't just come about. My mother taught me how to be organized. I had a student come in my office this morning. She said, your office is organized. And I thought, thank God for my mother. She doesn't believe in creation. She believes in evolution. But she goes against her belief system by teaching me how to be organized. You think about that. So I would say, yes, the Bible is responding to these various things. Now, yeah, Silly.
But I used to believe a lot in evolution too.
Okay.
But until I saw the verse that I think is also God's work in our hearts, because we have this view that covers us. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot the verse in New Testament, that we are spiritually blind until it was written in Paul's letter, until the Lord lift up this veil from us. So I'm just wondering,
is it that 2 Corinthians 4:4? For the God of this world has blinded the minds of unbelievers. But in that same chapter he says, But the veil on Moses is lifted. There's a veil over Israel to this present day.
Mm-hmm.
But through Jesus, the veil is lifted. Anyway, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No. So I think it's just quite amazing because very well-educated people, they believe in evolution and all this. And for us to believe in God, there is an element of word of God while we are trying to argue creation with someone. I mean, like, trying to share the gospel about creation with someone. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. This is a spiritual battle. This is not about evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if you talk about evidence, the evidence shows creation. Don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, don't porpoises give birth to porpoises? Don't ants give birth to ants? And I mean, it's exactly as Genesis 1 says. Every kind reproduces after their kind. There's obviously minor variations. We have speciation, but we don't have... there's no evidence, as the evolutionists say, that reptiles turned into birds.
Yeah.
They would like us to believe that, and it's quite imaginative. But on the creation link of my website, I've got more information than you can digest on that.
Okay.
35 presentations, I think, with about 3,000 slides on every aspect that you can think of. Because I want people to think through these things, and I want people to teach these things. Some of you will be helping on that, in translating that into Chinese. So, yes, good questions. Okay.
So I know that because the Bible says it was formless. Yeah. So how does that?
Okay.
Like the perspective of chaotic.
Well, it's quite clear. The very first verse, I'm jumping to slide 58. God created the heavens and the earth. But the next verse says the earth was formless and void. And darkness is over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Now, when did that happen? When did this happen? And God said, let there be light. You know, it may not be that clear in Genesis 1 as to when it actually happened. So what we should do is we should look at... we should look at the various theories about all of that. I try to go through some of them on slide 124. How does 1:1 relate to verses 2 and 3? I don't know if I want to get into all the details there, but if you read Genesis, here's my point. If you read Genesis 1 in its normal sense, or if you put Genesis 1 in front of 100 people, okay, Christian, non-Christian, whatever, and you ask them, how long does this chapter say that God took to make the earth? I'd like to try this experiment someday, but I believe that at least 99 out of 100 will say, well, this says it took him 6 days. I don't believe it, but that's what it says. Would you think that I'm exaggerating? Isn't it so clear? If we could just ask God about it. Whew, it just created a 24-hour period of alternating lightness and darkness on the earth, God says. And the angel says, well, what are you going to do now? God says, call it a day. You know? Now, you notice I don't have a particular verse there. That's just more of a joke. But I think what we've got here in Genesis 1 is days in the way that we normally think of days. It's an instantaneous creation. You've got Psalm 33 commenting on it, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made, their starry host by the breath of his mouth. John Whitcomb says in his book, The Early Earth, he says, certainly no thought here of delay or a trial and error process or a gradual step-by-step fulfillment. I would add to that Exodus 20, where the Lord says, for in 6 days, is it Exodus 20 verse, you should look it up. For in 6 days, the Lord created the heavens and the earth. There's your commentary. How long did it take? In the Ten Commandments, it says it took 6 days. Therefore, I would say that verses 1 and 2 and 3 were all on day 1. God said, let there be light. That's also day 1. The earth being formless and void is also day 1. That God made the earth, kind of like you and I would make something out of clay, except we don't create the clay. We'll take the clay and slap it on the spinning wheel, you know, to make a pot out of it, whatever. I think that the slapping it on there is also day one. God just takes the earth and it's not formed, so he forms it. And you have all these evening and morning right here, slide 131. What does evening and morning mean, except we're talking about like the Jewish day that starts in the evening? The only other time outside of Genesis 1 that evening and morning is used, it's literal, Daniel 8:26, the vision of the evenings and mornings has been told is true. He also gives a numerical adjective, second, etc. Now notice I didn't say first. Because Genesis 1 says, and there was evening and there was morning one day. It does not say, even if your translation says so, the first day. It says there was evening, there was morning one day. In other words, this is a day. This is a normal day. That defines how long it took. And then when you get to second day, third day, every time that a numerical adjective, second, third, fourth, etc., is used with yom, the day, the word day, like number 712, the first day, the guy who gave his offering on the first day, it's always literal. That's not to say that the word day can't mean, can't have a figurative usage. I mean, it does. In my father's day, you know, people didn't fly planes as much as they do today. I mean, that's, in English as well as in Hebrew, the word day can be used in a non-literal sense. But when the adjective is put in front of it, it's always literal. We also see the pattern here for work and rest coming out of Genesis 1. Why do we have a seven-day week? Nobody can explain it. The Babylonians can't explain it. No other people of antiquity or modern day can explain it. Why do we have 7 days? It all goes back really to Genesis 1. And the time idea comes. There's different ways to determine time. A Roman time that begins at midnight, the Jewish one that begins at 6 p.m., etc. What we find in Genesis 1 is not the Roman usage where the day begins at midnight. We find the Jewish usage. Well, doesn't that make sense? Genesis 1 is Jewish. So the day begins, and there was evening, and there was morning. So a day really lasts 24 hours up to 6 p.m. the next day. The evening begins around 6 p.m. The morning would begin around 6 a.m. One day. That's literally what it says in the Hebrew. And there was evening, and there was morning. The second day is the way the Hebrew text reads. So exegetically, it's, to me, I mean, it's so clear that we're talking about just the normal use of day here. Why do so many people not believe that these are actual days? Is there something in Genesis 1 that would change their mind? may I encourage you, read what they say. And pretty much all of them say, well, Genesis 1 says that these were normal days, but we know from science that that could not be the case. In other words, what the scientists say is considered of greater validity than what we have in Genesis 1. But I don't know anyone, whenever I talk to people about this, I don't know anyone who says, because of Genesis 1, that's why I believe the day is not a normal day. It's thousands of years or millions of years or whatever. If somebody says to you, well, but the sun was not created until day 4. So how can you have 12 hours of light before the sun was created? You know, how could God create light without a sun? You know what you should do? You just go like this to them. I just created light on my iPhone here without sun. And if my battery's good, I can keep this on for 12 hours. I can plug it in. Is there any rule against plugging it in? Yeah. If I can create light for 12 hours by turning out, flipping a light switch or whatever, could not God create light for 12 hours? A couple days later, get the sun. Actually, you know, I think that's this point. This idea of the sun and the moon. The fact that the sun and the moon were not created until day 4 is actually a support for a normal reading of Genesis 1. Why do I say that? Because how do you have the evening and the morning going on for millions and millions of years when you don't have any sun? How do you have animals, or how do you have plant life growing without any normal patterns of sun? How do you have seasons and all that without any sun? Does that make sense? For thousands of years or millions of years. I think it's more of a problem for other view than it is for this particular view. Here's another, Romans 1:20. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Did you catch that? How long have people been able to see God's power and divine nature? We have been able to see it since the creation of the world. Now, if we've been able to see it from since the creation of the world, how could it be seen for thousands of years or millions of years if there were no people? If we're going through this theistic evolution, this divinely directed evolutionary process, and man comes thousands or millions of years later, who was able to see it since the beginning of the world? No one. I'm going to believe Romans 1:20 that says that people have been able to see this, let's say, from creation week. Now, granted, Adam didn't see the first day of creation. I don't think he saw the first day because he wasn't created until the sixth day. But he was there from the beginning, creation week. So since creation, been clearly seen, it means since the start of creation, people have seen God. People didn't come about years later. This will argue for more of a literal 24-hour day view on this. So I'll take what the text says rather than trying to combine this with evolution so that we have some big daddy who's like ours from the beginning. Now, some of you are probably thinking, yeah, but what about the dinosaurs thing? Did dinosaurs come before man? I would say yes, they did. God created dinosaurs earlier on the sixth day. Dinosaurs come a few hours before man does. So I do believe dinosaurs preceded man. All right, there's a whole lot more to say about all of this.
Sorry, Dr. Rick.
Just yes.
Going back to the question, which was about the chaos at the beginning.
Yeah.
So, does that mean that chaos usually means a negative thing? So you wouldn't say that the first day of creation was chaotic, would you, or chaos? the earth was formless and empty. So, or is that just a description of the beginning of earth in the sequence of creation? When it says about, it's only in the notes anyway, it's not hardly authoritative, but it talks about out of chaos. Or does it simply mean out of nothing?
I don't think there was a... So the question is, how does chaos actually fit in here? I think God did create the world out of nothing. But as he puts the world there, the earth there, it's an unformed world. So in a sense, that's negative. That's bad. So he spends 3 days forming it. But to say, as let's say the gap theory says, that the earth became formless and void, the Hebrew scholars say, no. This idea that Satan fell, between verses 1 and 2, I think that's really reading into the text. This is an improbable translation of the Hebrew, disjunctive, the now the earth was. I think it's... and others will say Satan's fall came before God created the earth. And I would say, if Satan had fallen and all that, is the world really good? was the world truly, truly good? I don't think God would say that it truly is good if the world was a mess. We find God doing here is beautiful. God takes the dust of the ground. He takes and he fashions it into a rib. He fashions the rib into a woman, spare rib. Kidding. Women are the best spare rib ever. He created Adam and Eve out of dust. Do you know what these are? These are baby pictures of Adam and Eve. That's the closest way I can get to baby pictures. And they're with the serpent. They have the image of God in them. And this goes way, way back, that we're very, very distinct from animals. Eve was called the mother of all living. So she's the first. She's the first one to ever give birth. It's really hard-pressed to say there were people before Adam and Eve, as many people are saying nowadays. Even evangelicals are saying that. You find that actually even in the Chinese. Right? If you go to the original Chinese character, I'm going to check my Chinese here. Oh, yeah. This is dust plus breath. Plus enclosure, plus person, and person. So the Chinese character for garden means that there were two people in an enclosure made from dust, but breath was breathed into them. That is what the Chinese character means. You can see why Chairman Mao and the Communist Party tried to destroy traditional Chinese. Because all this is all simplified and it takes all the theology out of it. So I'm happy to talk about this for just hours and hours more, but I know that Lynch is calling you. And so I'm going to hold off on any other questions. We're happy to talk about that when we meet in the next session. To answer, think about some of these things, and we can talk about them then. But thank you so much. You guys are getting better about asking the questions. I think that's great. That's my goal, is for us to answer kind of the things that really are on our hearts and minds, okay? God bless you guys. Have a good weekend. We'll see you next time.